You're listening to Critical Reads. This show is designed to help people critically analyze topics like race, culture, and faith, one resource at a time. I am your host, Neff Lesperance. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Critical Reads, the podcast. As the intro says, I am your host, Neff. Welcome back to those of you who have been rocking with me for a little bit. For those of you who are new to the show, welcome. It's nice to have you here. So for today's episode, I'm going to do a book that's entitled The Road Back to You, An Enneagram Journey to Self-Discovery. This book is by Ian Morgan Cron and Susan Stable. For the next few episodes, like I shared the last episode, I'm going to be doing a few books that I found helpful just for general understanding of like mental health and understand yourself, building self-awareness. Obviously, there's like books out of the wazoo that you could be listening to, reading, you know, but these are just a few that I'm sharing for now that I found helpful. And obviously, you know, you can choose to read and, you know, take the meat, throw out the bones, take what you need out of it, etc. So for this week or this podcast episode, I wanted to do something that was a little bit more fun and talk about personality tests. Particularly, this one will be focusing on the Enneagram. I know for a lot of people, personality tests in general and even the Enneagram tests can have mixed feelings, mixed reactions. And right off the bat, I'm just going to say that my idea for promoting these personality tests and stuff, it's not necessarily to, again, define you as a person, because I do think in the scope of things, we can kind of vary. So for example, I know one of the tests out there is the Myers-Briggs, and that I happen to be an INFP, which means that I'm intuitive or introverted, intuitive, feeling, and prospecting. That's what the words mean. It's funny because I know sometimes they change a little bit, but I guess with INFP, I can be seen as somebody that's more a mediator and tend to be more quiet, open-minded, imaginative, caring, creative approaches to things that everything that I do is kind of what they look at. So introverted, you know, for me as an introvert, I may be more reserved. I know for me, I see that, and even to the point where like I recharge a lot more by spending time by myself and relaxing, even though I do at the same time enjoy being around people. So it doesn't mean that I don't enjoy around people. I just know I recharge from, you know, spending time alone. Intuitive, I know that kind of looks at that I'm able to kind of use my imagination to seek out new ideas and possibilities is how they kind of define that. I feel like I'm also really good at like looking at the deeper meaning of things. I tend to not be as practical. I like to look at the deeper meaning of things. And this is not all the time, but this is sometimes. And I'm really big at like, let's take some time to be innovative, look at, you know, the different perspectives, different things like that. I tend to like try to be outside of the box a lot of the times, which is good and bad. And then when you're looking at feelings, not to say that other people don't have feelings. People, all of us have feelings. But I know for me, I tend to lead more with my heart and my emotions, even though I can still reason through it as much as possible. But if I'm really not feeling something, I feel like I'm easily 0 to 100. And so part of me growing as a person has been looking at how to be okay with the little gray area a little bit more and not having to just jump, you know, with just my feelings always. And I know because of that, me being more feeling, I can burn out very easily. So that's something that I have to be very mindful of. And I know one of the things that they point out about feeling the feeling person is that we tend to, you know, make a lot of decisions based off of the well-beings of others. So I know sometimes that means I don't always think about my well-being. So yeah, so that's feeling. And then prospecting is compared to judging, but prospecting, I know that they tend to say that they tend to be more flexible with dealing with unexpected challenges. So that means like I'm able to handle changes very well. I know for years being in the ministry space, that was very helpful because if you work in ministry, you know that, you know, things change all the time. And so for some people who would get maybe dysregulated or have a hard time and all that stuff, like for me, I was like, it was like home. Like I was okay with like things not being planned out as much. So I think like for me, just knowing a little bit about myself just from the Myers-Briggs perspective was helpful, just because it helped me understand a little bit more about how I operate. And it's okay that some of these things kind of were more flexible, because sometimes that in the work setting, there's some areas that I would be more flexible, but at home, I'm a different way. So, but in general, it gave me a somewhat of an idea of how I reacted to things and helped make sense of some things for me in terms of what areas I needed to grow in and what areas I maybe have some challenges in. So in the same way, this Enneagram thing came out, and I think I learned about it a little bit beforehand. I don't remember how, but I learned about it beforehand, but I also ended up doing it in grad school. And I think a lot of the things that I learned from the Myers-Briggs test kind of helped me make some sense of some things, but when it came to how the Enneagram helped me learn more about myself, it highlighted some things that I never was really fully able to name. And I was like, shit, this is why I do this. Or this is what this was. So I think that's what I liked about this. At the end of the day, like I said, you don't have to be in the box with this stuff, and there's areas of growth and whatever, but I felt like this helped me put some language to some of the thoughts and the feelings that I did, or some of the patterns that I had, that I was like, what the fuck? Like, it was mind-blowing for me. So that is one of the reasons why I was kind of drawn to learning a little bit more about Enneagrams and just understanding a little bit more about them. And again, I think what I liked about this is that, you know, it kind of highlights a little bit more about, you know, what it looks like to be a little bit more healthy and unhealthy. And there's like a spectrum to things, because I do think with, at least with the Myers-Briggs, it's either you're one or another. And even though there is some spectrum to it, it's more binary. So it's a little harder to kind of see or imagine some kind of a spectrum. I think it's very easy to just pick, I'm either an I or an E. Like, there's no middle a lot of times, or at least there wasn't for a while. I know now there's like ambivert, where you're a little bit of both. But I do like with the Enneagram, there's a little bit more nuance, I guess, to the conversation about our personalities. So like we did with the past books, let's dive in a little bit into introducing the book and the authors. So for introducing the book, The Road Back to You, An Enneagram Journey to Self-Discovery, they kind of define the book, or they put for the book, ignorance is bliss, except in self-awareness. What you don't know about yourself can hurt you and your relationships, and even keep you in the shallows with God. Do you want help figuring out who you are and why you're stuck in the same ruts? The Enneagram is an ancient personality typing system with an uncanny accuracy in describing how human beings are wired both positively and negatively. In The Road Back to You, Ian Morgan Crone and Susan Stable forge a unique approach, a practical, comprehensive way of assessing Enneagram wisdom and exploring its connections with Christian spirituality for a deeper knowledge of ourselves, compassion for others, and love for God. Witty and filled with stories, this book allows you to peek inside each of the 9 Enneagram types, keeping you turning the pages long after you have read the chapter about your own number. Not only will you learn more about yourself, but you will also start to see the world through others' people's eyes. Understanding how and why people think, feel, and act the way that they do. Beginning with changes you can start making today, the wisdom of the Enneagram can help take you further along into who you are, leading you into places of spiritual discovery you would never have found on your own and paving the way to a wiser and more compassionate person you want to become. So, right off the bat, I do want to note and highlight, I do recognize that everybody is not especially identifying as a Christian. So I do understand that. I will say with this, the Enneagram in general, I think just learning about the types and stuff has been interesting. So I think it could apply to anybody's faith background. But I know this particular book kind of talks about it from a Christian spirituality perspective. So I want to be mindful about that. So if you don't particularly identify as a Christian or are not interested in reading from somebody that's a Christian, that's understandable. But I will say that, I don't know, a lot of the insights they do offer in this book can be applicable to everybody. But I did want to at least acknowledge that part of it because I know there are people who identify as different faiths or have been really burned by the church in general. So reading this may be difficult. But again, I do encourage learning from other perspectives, even if you don't completely agree with everything. So there's that. So just to read a little bit about the two authors, Susan Stable is an internationally renowned teacher and director of retreats. She offers a unique and creative approach to the practice of spiritual formation. She is a master teacher of the Enneagram. Susan draws upon her educational background at Southern Methodist University, as well as her life skills learned as a mother of four, a social worker, and a minister spouse. Her refreshing teaching style is an unforgettable blend of humor, honesty, and authenticity. She and her husband, Joseph, are the founders of Life in the Trinity Ministry and the Micah Center in Dallas, Texas. And then the second author, Ian Morgan Crone, is a best-selling author, nationally recognized speaker, Enneagram teacher, trained psychotherapist, Dove-winning award songwriter, and Episcopal priest. His books include the novel Chasing Francis and the spiritual memoir Jesus, My Father, the CIA, and Me. Ian draws on an array of disciplines from psychology to arts, Christian spirituality, and theology to help people enter more deeply into conversation about God and the mystery of their own lives. He and his wife, Anne, live in Nashville, Tennessee. So that's about the book and about the authors. So when we talk a little bit about what made me pick this book, for one, I've always, like I said, loved personality quizzes and tools that kind of help me understand myself more. I think very early on, I recognized there was something in me that, you know, was drawn to psychology and therapy, and I felt like I didn't really have a sense of what I wanted, especially since very early on, I feel like I took on, this is what my parents want, this is what my friends want, this is what this person wants. But when people would ask me, hey, what do you like to do for fun? What do you like about yourself? What do you want? I would always struggle and say, I don't know, right? And so I think part of my journey of discovering more about me and who I was kind of taking some of these personality tests and, you know, kind of exploring a little bit more about, you know, who I am, what interests I have. And it's funny enough, a lot of them would say, you're a helper, you're a healer, you're a mediator. And the more I would see that, sometimes it would, you know, annoy the fuck out of me because I knew that about myself, but like reading it about myself was also difficult sometimes because I didn't always want to have that role, especially because I was not really versed in how to have like healthy boundaries with it. I just knew that I liked doing those things. I loved healing, counseling, whatever, but I didn't know how to have a healthy boundary with it. And so with time, I had to kind of start learning what it looks like to be a counselor, be a therapist, like to help people along their journey, help with their healing, but do it in a way that's not like self-sabotaging or hurting myself or causing me to have issues with my mental health, and finding like a balance. And that's still something that I'm working on. But I think a lot of these personality quizzes, or even like, again, this Enneagram thing, helped me really understand where I have some issues and barriers with the process. So what is this book covering? So the Enneagram teaches that there are 9 different personality styles in the world, one of which we all naturally gravitate toward and adapt in childhood to cope and feel safe. Each type or number has a distinct way of seeing the world and an underlying motivation that powerfully influences how that type thinks, feels, and behaves. I think the interesting thing about the Enneagram too is that in any of the types you have, you do kind of touch on some of the other types, but it just highlights again that there's maybe one that you gravitate to the most. And so I think that's kind of why I think this one is kind of cool, because it's a little bit more holistic. It doesn't really put you in one particular box. It recognizes that you have other pieces of the other Enneagrams as well. But the goal that the authors kind of have here in the book, they say that the goal of understanding your Enneagram type or number, which they kind of use interchangeably in the book, is not to delete or replace your personality with a new one. The purpose of the Enneagram is to develop self-knowledge and learn how to recognize or disidentify with the parts of your personalities that limit us, so we can be reunited with our truest and best selves, that pure, true diamond blazing in the invisible light of heaven, as Thomas Merton said. The point of it is self-understanding and growth beyond the self-defeating dimensions of our personality, as well as improving relationships and growing in compassion for others. So essentially here, they're highlighting that the point of understanding your Enneagram is to learn more about yourself and learn how to adjust to the parts of your personality that need some pruning, right? So I think as I learned a little bit more of my Enneagram, learned about how I react when I'm healthy, how I react when I'm unhealthy, and how I am kind of in the middle, it kind of helps me, you know, be more alert to, okay, now if you're being unhealthy or you're leaning towards some of your unhealthy behaviors, what actions do you need to take to kind of get you back to the healthy side, right? Or even, I mean, unfortunately, there are some times where I'm like, okay, I'm being unhealthy right now, and I kind of have to like move through that. And that may be more when I'm dealing with depression, but at least I'm aware, like, hey, you're doing this, we're going to have to make some adjustments. I might give you a day or two to finish this unhealthy behavior, Neff, but we got to get it together, right? So at least I will say this has helped me be more honest about where I'm at and make some adjustments. And so I think that's part of what I will be talking about with this podcast. I think some of this will end up being a little bit of a roast on me in some ways, but I'm doing this to kind of show and highlight how helpful this can be to help you understand about yourself, what's going on and what adjustments you can make. Just like I myself had to do that, where I recognized, okay, these are some of the areas where I struggle. These are some of the areas of what I do and how I need to make some adjustments so I can experience some freedom with some of the patterns that I've been doing, that I'm sitting here like, what the fuck? Why am I not changing? Why am I still experiencing this? Why do I keep choosing the same types of people? Blah, 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 blah. A lot of the times it's because I'm doing these unhealthy patterns that I'm not recognizing that I need to make some adjustments, right? So that's kind of what I encourage using some of your personality tests or just using some of these tests to understand. And again, it's okay if you find things that are not so geared to the spiritual stuff or whatever makes you feel comfortable. But ultimately, it's just about learning about yourself. And I just happen to like this book in particular because it kind of spoke to my theological nerd side. So let's start a little bit in talking about what kind of stood out to me or what how the authors kind of organized this. So first, the authors begin by explaining what the Enneagram is, and they kind of give some intro to all of the nine types. So they note that the Enneagram takes its name from the Greek words nine, which is like Ennea, and for a drawing or a figure of Graham. So it is a nine-pointed geometric figure that illustrates nine different but interconnected personality types. Each numbered point on the circumference is connected by two others by arrows across the circle, indicating their dynamic interaction with one another. So just a quick explanation of that is, you know, when you do look at the Enneagram, it looks like a weird a weird geometry looking project, but you do notice that. So for example, I know I will talk about how I am a nine, but then as a nine, I connect to the six and a three. And then so for some others, as a one, if you're a one, you might connect, you connect to a seven and a four. So like all of, it looks like a weird little star thing, but you are connected to different numbers on this line. So again, it's where I feel like it's kind of cool because it adds some nuance to your personality because you kind of connect to some of the other things on your number. So they do note that no personality type is better or worse than the other. Each has its own strengths. Each has its own weakness. Nothing is gender biased. So I think that's also important. I will say that I think with anything, we can have the desire to be a certain type, or we may struggle sometimes with whatever number we fall into. Sometimes you may have some confidence or overconfidence about what number you have, for example. And this is not like a bad thing, but I know like if you're an eight and you're a challenger, like you may be very excited about being a person that's like, yeah, I fight things, I do things, right? So, which isn't a bad thing, but it's recognizing like every single type has its importance. Every single type is essential. Every single type has its strengths and weaknesses, like they said. And I think the theology nerd in me is reminded of like, you know, in the Bible, it does talk a little bit about the different parts of the body and how every part of the body is essential for the body to work, right? So, you know, we have hands for a reason. We have feet, even our pinky toe, like all of these different parts of our body is useful for something, even though you may not always think about it. If that part of your body is missing, the body doesn't work or function correctly, right? So I think that's kind of how you can kind of look at these Enneagrams, is that every single part or type, you know, is essential for our flourishing as a society, our flourishing as a human race, whatever. But it just recognizing like we all come at it at a different way, and we all have our own strengths and weaknesses, and that's okay, right? So these are some of the types, right? So type one is a perfectionist. So they tend to be ethical, dedicated, and reliable. They are motivated by a desire to live the right way, improve the world, and avoid fault and blame. Type two is the helper. They're usually warm, caring, and giving. They are motivated by a need to be loved and needed, and to avoid acknowledging their own needs. Type three is the performer. They're success-oriented, image-conscious, and wired for productivity. They are motivated by a need to appear or appear to be successful and to avoid failure. Type four is the romantic. They're creative, sensitive, moody. They are motivated by a need to be understood, evidenced by their oversized feelings, and avoid being ordinary. Type five is the investigator. They're analytical, detached, and private. They are motivated by a need to gain knowledge, conserve energy, and avoid relying on others. Type 6 is the loyalist. They're committed, practical, and witty. They are worst-case scenario thinkers who are motivated by fear and the need for security. Type 7 is the enthusiast. They're fun, spontaneous, and adventurous. They are motivated by a need to be happy, to plan stimulating exercises, and to avoid pain. Type 8 is the challenger. They are commanding, intense, and confrontational. They are motivated by a need to be strong and avoid feeling weak and vulnerable. And then type 9 is the peacemaker. They're pleasant, laid back, and accommodating. They are motivated by a need to keep the peace, merge with others, and avoid conflict. And so these are the 9 different Enneagram numbers. And so the authors kind of note that these 9 different Enneagrams are also kind of divided into triads. And so each triad has 3 different numbers in it. So there's 3 that fall into the heart and feeling triad, which ends up being 2, 3, and 4. And those end up being driven by feelings. The anger and gut triad is 8, 9, and 1. And those numbers tend to be driven more by anger. And then the fear and head triad, which is 5, 6, and 7, those end up being driven a little bit more by fear. And so I know for me, I thought these were interesting, especially which I will talk about a little bit more. I tend to be classified more as an Enneagram 9, even though initially I thought I might be a 2. Which, you know, would have been funny because I, you know, back to the helper. But as a 9, I was driven more by anger. And so at first I was like, interesting. But then as I read more about this personality type, I was like, oh, yeah. So I get to that sooner. But I just wanted to also note that each of these types, they kind of have wings. So wings are numbers. And I mean, I think some don't, but some people may not, but some people have wings, and wings are basically numbers that are on either side of your number. So I know, for example, again, since mine was a 9, I could either have been a wing 8 or a wing 1. Later, I find out I'm a wing 1. But when with the wings, you may lean toward one of these numbers, and that kind of has some specific traits or energies that we will kind of talk about a little bit more, since I tend to be more of a wing 1. And then there's numbers that are also stress and security numbers. So your stress number is the number that your personality tends to move towards when you're like overtaxed, under fire, when things are just going wrong and it's rough. And then your security number is maybe the type that your personality moves towards where you're kind of doing well, you're feeling secure, you have energy, resources, different things like that. So I thought that was also kind of interesting. That's different with the Enneagram, that they kind of give you a number that you kind of lean toward when you're more secure, you're doing well, things like that. And then there's maybe a number you lean more towards when you're stressed. One thing that's different about this book in particular that I thought was interesting is they do talk about deadly sin. So for every type, there's a deadly sin that you may struggle with. So sins are fixations that prevent the energy of life, God's love, from flowing freely. They are self-erected blockades that cut us off from God and hence from our own authentic potential. Again, I know this idea of God and spirituality may be meh to some people, and that's fine. But I did like the idea of deadly sin in a way, because basically they kind of look at sin as anything that kind of separates you from connecting with your spiritual self, connecting with God or your higher power, and also just freely being able to be connected to people around you and the universe and things like that. So it's kind of anything that prevents you from being your true, authentic self and feeling free, which is how I kind of interpreted that. And so I thought that was like an interesting, way of looking at this. And so each Enneagram number has a unique passion or deadly sin that drives that number's behavior. And the teachers who developed the Enneagram saw that each of the nine numbers had a particular weakness or temptation to commit one of the seven deadly sins drawn from the list of Pope Gregory, composed in the 6th century. So there's, you know, fear, deceit, and some other ones that they're going to bring up here. And so each personality's deadly sin is like an addictive, involuntary, repeated behavior that we can only be free of when we recognize how often we give in to it and let it drive our personality. So again, the sin part, you know, it may sit weird with everybody, but when I was like looking at mine, I was like, yeah, I could see me doing that in multiple ways when I'm not healthy. So that's why I was like, oh, this is an interesting concept to kind of add to this dimension of things. So the author also kind of discusses, or the authors kind of discuss, like how Enneagrams show up as a child and relationships at work, when they're trying to figure out their spiritual formation and things like that. So I'm going to kind of be looking at, again, myself, that's in Enneagram 9 Wing 1, and kind of discussing how this book helped me learn a little bit more about myself. So let's dive in, shall we? Yeah, so like I said, this is going to be a little bit of a read for me. But again, I'm highlighting the importance of doing this just so that you can look a little bit more about like where you fall and where you struggle, just so that you can help become a healthier version of yourself. And I know in the last episode, I talked a lot about being uncomfortable and dealing with change and growth and how that's a big part of the healing journey. And I really stand behind that. And I do think books like these can help with that process. Because I think until you're really aware of your patterns, and especially your unhealthy ones, it's hard to really show up for yourself and to heal yourself. And I know, aside from this, as an example, one of the things I had to work on at one point is even recognizing like, hey, one of my unhealthy habits is my eating. And to the point of like, I would emotionally eat. So if I am feeling, or I was feeling really sad and upset, my first reaction sometimes was, let me go find a cookie, let me go find cake, let me go find whatever. And I do think as women in our society, we kind of are taught a lot of times to eat our feelings. And it's not just women. I know men struggle with it too. But, you know, over time, I was recognizing like, okay, yes, I can eat this cookie. I can eat a whole box of cookies. I can eat a whole carton of ice cream. But at the end of the day, I have to deal with what's going on. You know, I have to deal with what's making me sad or what's making me angry or whatever the case may be. So I think learning a little bit more of myself and learning, especially like I said, with this anger thing, that I had a lot of internalized anger was a big part of me being like, okay, Neff, we're putting the cookie down and we're going to actually deal with this anger, or we're going to actually acknowledge this anger and not be afraid of it. And so that was really hard. That was a journey for me. I still eat sometimes, not all the time, but there are some times I'm like, ugh, I'm getting chocolate. But for the most part, those activities have been happening less because I've been working on acknowledging what I'm feeling and how I'm angry or sad or whatever the case may be. So that's just a little caveat. So yes, 9 wing 1. So 9 with a wing 1 is kind of seen as a perfectionist. So here they said that we have a strong sense of difference between right and wrong. One energy helps these 9 stay a little bit more focused, so they are able to accomplish more, which enhances their confidence. 9 wings 1 are more critical, orderly, introverted, and passive aggressive than other 9s. Because of their concerns about matters of right and wrong, they are apt to be involved in peacemaking efforts or other social justice causes. These 9s are principled and modest as leaders, and people want to follow them because of their integrity and steadfastness. So, right off the bat, I think, you know, you may notice like even the fact that I decided to do a Critical Reads podcast kind of highlights the fact that I tend to be like a 9, like they shared. I think very early on, I've always had a sense of right and wrong. I've always wanted to fight for the little guy. If I notice injustice, instantly I'm pissed. So a lot of this already speaks to me. I know I brought up earlier that I am introverted. So that spoke to me. Passive aggressive was a woof, yikes to read. But yes, I know that's something that I've always dealt with. And I think it didn't help, honestly, being in ministry spaces, because I think especially as a Black woman and predominantly white spaces, because that's kind of where I was in ministry, it never felt okay to really voice and share my anger as is. I mean, I think in our society in general, there's not really a space for Black anger, especially Black women anger. So my way of a lot of times communicating my concerns or my anger was through passive aggression, instead of just being free to be assertive and say, hey, this bothers me. I think that's also just something I learned at home, because when I did share, hey, this bothers me, you're hurting me, whatever, instead of it being met with sincere care and adjustments and things like that, my family was pretty passive aggressive as well, or they just chose not to listen to me very much. So after a while, I just was passive aggressive towards them, because I never felt like they really gave a shit anyways. So long story short is passive aggressive was definitely up there for me. And I had to kind of recognize like, shit, I do this. And this is something I need to adjust. So they do say like when nines are in a healthy state, we kind of make natural mediators. We see the value and perspectives of other people. We can harmonize what seems to be an irreconcilable point of view. We can be unselfish, flexible, inclusive. We don't always attach to our own way of seeing things or doing things. We learn to make decisions based on the right priorities. We can be inspiring and self-actualized people. So I do see this a lot. I know I talk with one of my friends, Jenny, all the time about how a lot of the times in my roles, I end up being a bridge builder. I love learning about different people, noticing their skills, their strengths, connecting people. I know in my workspaces, I know our society is really big about you just go to work, don't make friends, blah, blah, blah. But for me, I'm like, no, like we spend 40 hours a week together. If we can find a way to really like learn about each other and grow and, you know, be a place where we can be somewhat community for each other while we're at work, I love that shit. And so I even think about where I work right now in treatment. We're all therapists. It's very easy to get burnt out when you're working with mental health patients as well. And we also have the extra layer of some of our patients deal with substance use. And so for me, I always see my team as an opportunity to help each other, learn from each other's strengths and weaknesses, inspire each other to be better clinicians. And so that's not always like encouraged in our space. But for me, I think there's also an element of me that's an idealist too. So I'm like, I see the space for what it is. And I'm like, this is what it could be. So that's worked towards what it could be. And so I'm very big on just working towards building the morality of our team. I'm really big towards, you know, helping each other become a better version of themselves. And I know, for example, if I ever became a leader of an organization, I feel like I would really be big on, even if you don't stay with me for like thousands of years, the time that you're there, I want to make you so good and so aligned with your future goals that even if you leave me in a few months, a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever the case is, you can leave as a better version of yourself than you came in. I'm not trying to hold you back from what you're called to do, right? So I think that's always been like naturally like how I am. And so I saw that a lot when I'm healthy, that I'm really capable of doing those things. And so that's something that when I read more about the nines, I was like, yeah, this is me. But average nines, I guess when you're kind of in the middle, we can come off as sweet, easygoing. We're stubborn, out of touch with our anger, which I think I struggle with that a lot. We generally feel unimportant. We occasionally wake up and realize that we have to work on investing in ourselves. I've struggled with that as of late. but I see this on and off for myself. They're willing to stand up for justice on the behalf of others, but are not likely to risk doing much to stand up for themselves. They don't ask for much, though they appreciate what others do for them. So I think right now I'm somewhere in the middle of an average and healthy 9, where on my good days, I'm really good about, like I said, empowering people and all that. But then on the days that I'm not doing so hot, I notice like definitely that I'm really big on like making sure others are okay. I'm making sure that I'm investing in others. Sometimes I'm willing to even put my neck out or stick up for other people. But a lot of times I'm not always willing to fight for my own stuff. So that was another area where I was like, oof, yes. And I also realized like I'm a person that I don't necessarily ask for much, even though I have needs and I can sit with myself and recognize like the needs are there. But for me to actually take the extra step of being like, okay, I really want to figure out ways to meet my needs, and I need people to help me do that. I'd rather do anything else but actually admit it and actually take steps to do that. It's something that I'm working on, but I think a lot of my past experiences, especially like I said with family and just some friends actually too that didn't work out so great, make me very skittish when it comes to actually asking for what I need in a relationship. So again, something that I'm working on and something that's great that I have a therapist for. And then lastly, unhealthy 9s tend to have trouble making decisions, become overly dependent, dull feelings of sadness and angers by engaging in numbing behaviors, and they kind of try to maintain this illusion that all is well. And so they can kind of go back and forth between acquiescing or like giving into other people's needs and then open hostility. So I will say I am not completely in this all the time, but there are a lot of times where I kind of fall into this as well. So I think when I do too much of the not asking for my needs to be met or like voicing my needs and all that stuff, I can become resentful. I can struggle a lot with being angry and sad about that. And then now I'm eating my feelings or I'm numbing myself out to by watching TV or reading books or like doing something else, or I'm, you know, drinking every once in a while. But I make it a practice, not to drink when I'm emotional, but hey, sometimes that happens. And so a lot of it is me having to finally sit with myself and say, Neff, like, you're feeling sad, you're feeling rejected, you're numbing your feelings, you need to deal with this. And so I've learned over the years to bounce back from this a little bit faster, but it still kind of happens here and there. I will say that I'm better about not becoming overly dependent on people, but, you know, things happen. So it's I like this because it helps me kind of look at how I fall into like a range of this at different points of my life, and I can make adjustments as needed. Because even when I'm healthy, I don't want to get to the point where I'm like over helping people too much and I'm not taking care of myself and I get back to being unhealthy again, right? So again, this helps kind of move that spectrum along. So when we look at deadly sins for me as a 9, mine is the sloth, which I thought was hilarious, but because I just imagining the way that I move as a sloth would be funny. But this is kind of associated with physical loneliness or physical laziness, sorry, most of the times. But the sloth in 9s, they kind of look at it in more of a spiritual nature. So average 9s are disconnected from the passion and motivational drive necessary to rise up and live their own wild and precious life. Immature 9s don't fully connect with the fire in the belly they need to chase after their own God-given life, and as a result, fail to become their own person. The author kind of adds that oftentimes tapping into those fiery passion and intellectual drives would upset the inner peace and equilibrium the 9 treasures above almost everything else. So my initial reaction to this was, whew, sloth, man, laziness. But I what they note here really did stick out to me, because I do think a lot of the times me really pushing for what I'm passionate or motivated by or what drives me, a lot of times it would cause a lot of conflict. And especially because as with my personality, I'm so used to saying yes and acquiescing to other people's needs, that me moving towards my stuff means that I'm saying no to their stuff. And because I'm doing that, you know, obviously people's natural reaction is to be upset about this. So I think a lot of the times, because I don't want to deal with them being upset and I want to keep the peace and the equilibrium as they talk about, I tend to just be like, nope, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to go against their grain, which kicks me in the foot. Or kicks me in the ass and shoots me in the foot, I should say. And so when I did first read this, I was like, ooh, correct. And just even thinking about like my own personal journey, you know, I think from 11th grade, I knew that I was going to end up in the counseling field or therapy field. And because my family, my parents especially, wanted me to be in medical school and go become a doctor, and I knew I hated it. Me pursuing my passion and going after something that might drive me scared me so much so, especially because of their reaction, that I was like, fine, I'll pursue a medical degree and I'll figure that out. But then as I was slowly trying to figure that out, depression and anxiety started kicking my ass. And so I had to figure out, okay, is the peace that I might experience of like not making my parents upset and not dealing with their conflict worth this long-term depression and anxiety? At the end of the day, I had to say no, especially because internally I wasn't at peace, right? So I had to, it kind of forced me to make a decision. But I knew a lot of it came down to the fear that I had about fully connecting to my needs and acknowledging them and being real about them. And so that took me a minute. And so a lot of the times that's where the sloth mentality came from, where I just didn't move. I didn't do anything. I just stayed in like a passive laying position a lot of times and just let things happen to me instead of me actively pursuing what I wanted. So I think this is where, you know, this deadly sin, I was like, yeah, this definitely applies to me. And I think he goes on later to say, nines are slothful when it comes to fully paying attention to their own lives, figuring out what they want in life, chasing their dreams, addressing their own needs, developing their own gifts, and pursuing their calling. They cling to and protect their Hakuna Matata in an inner harmony. They ask little of life and hope life returns the favor. If eights are too in touch with their gut's instincts and overexpress their angers, nine are out of touch with their gut and underexpress their anger. Definitely me. Nines are out of touch with the good side of anger, the part that inspires, drives change, moves things along, and gives them the courage to stand up for themselves. When you're unplugged from this side of anger, you become lethargic and dreamy. And again, this, I saw this a lot in myself, where I was a dreamer, an idealist, all this stuff. But I would never get in touch with myself or my anger or my drive enough to actually do something about it for a while. I think in some ways I've worked a little bit more on at least addressing some of my needs and pursuing or developing a lot more of my gifts and things like that. But in terms of like really chasing my dream, I think right now, to be honest, I don't even know what my dream is right now. I think it's kind of a work in progress, but not necessarily because I don't want to pursue anything. I think it's more, I think between COVID and, you know, deconstructing and trying to figure out my faith and try to figure out my calling again, I'm kind of in a standstill. So it's not necessarily because I'm trying to take on other people's stuff. It's just I genuinely, I'm like, I don't fucking know anymore. But even then, I am recognizing like there's a lot of ways that I'm still working on figuring out what do I actually need and want. And even if I'm in a position where I'm open to something and I try it, and in the middle of it, I'm like, actually, I don't want to do this again, or I don't want to do this at all right now, just being okay to say, I'm out. and tap out and be okay with that and not be so worried about how people are going to react to it. So that's something that I'm working on. Because I think one thing I am learning about being a nine is, as much as I'm like, oh, well, I don't want to be in conflict internally, I'm still in conflict. I may not be having conflict with the person and having to have an awkward conversation or whatever the case may be, but I'm still suffering a lot internally. So, you know, it's not really benefiting me at all at the end of the day. It's just prolonging the suffering that I have to deal with. And I even saw this recently at work, because I had a situation where I felt like I was kind of disrespected. I was cut off and all this stuff. And so for a week or two, or kind of a week, I was like super angry, and I didn't know how to express my anger about it, especially because my director is a white woman. But I just wasn't sure how to express my anger. But I knew, and I knew if I expressed it at the day of, in the moment of, it wasn't going to be nice. But I had to figure out, like, okay, at the end of the day, I've been angry about this for a week. So as much as I don't want to have the conflict of, hey, we need to talk about what happened, me internally, like, dealing with this is also not helping me either, because I'm building up anger and resentment, and this is internally disturbing my peace as well. Because I do think building up anger and resentment and not dealing with your feelings about it is also, like, you know, again, like drinking poison and expecting somebody else to die, you know. So it's not helping me, it's not serving me, and it's not helping me have a good day or a good life, right? So, I mean, as I'm sharing this right now, we are going to have a conversation. I'm going to have a conversation with my clinical director at some point. But it's one of those things where I was like, ooh, I don't want to do this, but I know internally I'm not going to sit well and be rested and have a sense of harmony until I have this conversation. So I think part of me learning my type and how I deal with things helps me be more willing to sit with the uncomfortable and engage in conflict more. And honestly, I think if you knew me in high school, if you knew me in undergrad, and even in some of grad school, you would know, like, I am terrible when it comes to conflict. I do not like dealing with it, but it's something that I've noticed in the past few years that I've grown in, even though there are moments where I'm still very hesitant to even engage in the conflict to begin with. So there's that. Ooh, and then one of the other ways that this book calls me out is it talks about how nines are really big about self-forgetting and merging. I think originally when I read this or I learned this about myself, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this explains me so much. And I had no idea how to name, like, this behavior that I have. But they were saying that nines tend to self-forget. And he says all three numbers in the anger triad are self-forgetting. So eights forget to rest and self-care. Ones forget to kick back and have fun more often. And nines forget their opinions, preferences, and priorities. Instead, they merge with feelings, viewpoints, and pursuits of others, and in doing so, they erase themselves. To avoid kicking up a hornet's nest in their relationships, unevolved nines neglect their soul's summons to identify, name, and assert what they want in life and go hard after it. In fact, they can merge so deeply with the life program and identity of another person or another trait that they eventually make others' feelings, opinions, successes, and aspirations for their own. So I know for me, when I first read this, I was like, holy crap. Like, I had never recognized, or like, I was never able to name this until this, like, basically read me to filth. And I think, you know, again, as a person that is a bridge builder, a person that, I know one of the things about my personality is, like, two people can be explaining a story to me, or one person can be explaining a story to me. And as they're explaining a story to me of what happened, I can sit and imagine, this is how my friend felt during this situation. This is how the other person may have felt while they were going through this situation that my friend is explaining to me. And as I'm understanding and feeling both sides, I can be objective and kind of figure out how to bridge things. So I'm very adaptable. I'm really good at like picking up on people's emotions. I can merge, like they say, and I could forget, you know, but because I'm like that, there does come a point sometimes in a lot of my relationships where I'm like, I don't know what I want. I don't really, sometimes I genuinely don't care about, like, I don't have a preference for a place to eat, or I don't have a preference about certain things. But in the moments where I start recognizing, actually, I do have a preference for this or a preference for that, I have such a hard time, you know, explaining or sharing it, that it adds some like internal conflict for me in my relationships with the other person. And so when I was reading this, I was like, oh my goodness, this explains so much of like where I'm at with this. And so that has kind of helped me in being okay a little bit more with, hey, like, it's okay for some of these different things that you're like, you really don't know what you want or what you like, or you're adaptable. That's fine. But as you're learning, like, oh, actually, I don't like this, don't be afraid to voice that. Don't be afraid to change things. And that's something I'm still working on, because I think for years I've been so used to not having my voice like listened to or accepted or certain things like that, that it's still a work of progress, and there's still a lot of fear and anxiety that I have about voicing my true feelings and opinions. But I think learning this was a game changer for me, because it helped me name something that I was like, shit, I didn't even know that this is what this was, or I didn't recognize this pattern. But then as I learned this, I could see in every relationship where this was such an ongoing thing. And so now I am learning a lot more of like, okay, this is what I actually need, what I need to prioritize. This is an opinion I have on a certain thing. And there's still times I really genuinely don't care. But again, when I do recognize like these are the things I need, what I feel or what I, you know, want to prioritize, I have to be willing to do that. So that's been a game changer for me. And then lastly, I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, some things that stood out to me about where they talked about nines being children and nines in relationships, because some of these made me kind of chuckle, but also I was like, damn, absolutely right. But very quickly, nines as children, they did talk a lot about how nines as children tend to be very easygoing. They don't really push back. They're very uncomfortable even when there's conflict between parents and other family members. So they try to play a role as a mediator and things like that. And so this kind of made me laugh, because I think it unlocked a core memory that I have, where there was a time where both of my parents were arguing about something. I don't even remember what it was about, but I took on the role of making them sit down and talk it out. And I remember I think I was in like elementary school, but I took it upon myself to be like, my parents are fighting right now, and I really want to make sure that they're okay. And so I forced them to sit down and talk about, okay, this hurt me because of this. And it was just funny now to think about the fact that little me was like, something is wrong. There's conflict. I don't like this, and I want to make sure that we can come up with a peaceful solution between the two of you guys. So that was, I don't know, that just made me laugh, because I was like, yes, even as a child, I had a lot of this energy. And then the last thing about like that stood out to me, and especially when they talk about nines and like how we are in relationships, I thought that, you know, they again brought up a lot of things that I struggle with, but they say here, a healthy nine is someone who has woken up and found their voice or come into their own. They know they're important enough to invest in, and that they matter in the lives of their family, their friends, and coworkers. A healthy nine is spiritually inspiring. They are receptive to the world, yet not so open or lacking in boundaries that they lose their own sense of self-definition. So I thought that's something, I was like, yes, I want to work towards that. But this is where it gets me, where they're like, nines who are asleep get in trouble in relationships when conflicts arises or when it doesn't. They refuse to acknowledge or resolve it. Denial is a big defense mechanism for them. They don't want to face anything that will unsettle their harmony. So they tell their inner orchestra to play louder while their ship is sinking. They might ignore the obvious signs that something's wrong, minimize their problems, or suggest a simple repair that only reveals how out of touch they are with the magnitude of the issue, or how they are, how determined they are to avoid the unpleasantness of dealing with it. Because they want to avoid conflict and painful conversations, others have to hold nine's feet to the fire to address serious problems in relationships. Their desire to skirt conflict and fuse with another person's is so strong that nines will cling to the relationships long past their expiration dates. Whew. So this has been calling me out, especially now in my current life circumstances. And again, even though I've worked on a lot of this, I think as I was prepping for this, I was reminded of, I know right now I'm working through some relationships where I'm still trying to figure out where I am, what I need, different things like that. And one of the things that I had to recognize is right now I'm working through, you know, incorporating white friends into my space again. I haven't had one in a very long time. I haven't had to work on building relationships with white people in a while. And so I think the women that I have in my space right now, I've really enjoyed, and they're very confident. They're really cool people. But there's also some fears that's associated with really letting myself in because of some of my past experiences with white women, particularly. So for me, part of me working through some of this initially was I had to work through the denial part of it, as they brought up in here. And so for me, I was like, I don't want to deal with this feeling, or I don't want to acknowledge that this is here. And even then, if I did acknowledge if it's there, what do I say? Like, I don't want to offend my friends who happen to be white and say, hey, you're triggering me because of blah, 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 you know? So, and at the end of the day, I think it's one of those situations where I have to be willing to do what I did with like my therapist, like I mentioned last week, and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. I want to work on this, right? But it still required a level of vulnerability and acknowledging that this is something that's going on. And instead, I'm like, play the music up. Let's not deal with this. Let's minimize the problem, right? And so, I don't know, as I was prepping for this and I was reading through this again, I was like, damn, like, you know, this is something I'm currently doing and I need to be mindful of. And again, this is why I really love the Enneagram book and, you know, just understanding this personality type for me, because there are so many things that even though I've seen a lot of great changes and a lot of victories in a lot of these areas, there's still some areas that I'm like, hey, there's still some areas that I need to improve or some things that I can grow on. And that's okay. And so I know that's something, you know, as I'm saying this to you all now in this podcast episode, this is something that I'm going to have to work on, or that I'm wanting to work on, is figuring out how to not, you know, live so much in denial and actually face what's going on and face my issues and share and have these very painful conversations. And I think something that I'm even recognizing for me as a nine and as an introvert and all these different things is, I think what's been really hard for me too is like constantly having to engage in conflict and having these hard conversations have also just been draining for me in general, especially because I think right now I'm in the season where I'm not only having like conflict with one person and at home or like in one particular area, but it's been conflict in multiple areas. Like I'm having conflict at home, conflict at work, conflict in some of my relationships. So it's like a constant, like I'm having to engage and engage and engage in all these different conversations. And I think so for me, that's where I've been struggling a little bit in trying to navigate, you know, internally, I need to engage some of this conflict so I can deal with the issues that it's causing me, particularly the internal unrest that this causes me, which sometimes looks like anxiety and difficulty sleeping and having fights in my head type of thing. But at the same time, like the constant conversations, it's also exhausting. So I think that's been something where I've had to be like, okay, I need to show grace to myself too while I'm working on being healthy, because the constant conflicts and the constant conversations and the constant, you know, need for engaging with people in these different conversations can be very taxing. And I think one of the good things is that I am somewhat fortunate that I have people in my space that I can talk to you about this stuff, including my therapist, and process things. And then the people that I have engaged in a conflict, for the most part, we've had good conversations and they've respected my feelings. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still very scary to make those steps, you know, still, right? And so I know I'm constantly in the state of like fight or flight and pushing through. And yeah, and again, it could be exhausting. So I think one of the things that I've had to practice is, you know, taking some breaks too sometimes, and, you know, recognizing like, it's okay that I'm angry. It's okay that I need to take a time out. And then, but I still have to be willing to have that conflict. So again, I know I brought up like, hey, I was mad for a week about something that happened at work. But again, I knew at that particular moment, if I tried to engage with this conflict with this person, it wasn't going to be a productive conversation. And I also, I think partially me being the nine that I am, I needed some space to even figure out what am I mad about? What is upsetting me? What is it that I want out of this conversation even? Because I didn't want to like jump into the conversation and not really know what I want from it, or what I want to prioritize, how I want to move forward. So I think even part of this journey for me is recognizing like, hey, it's okay to not know right away, but know that there's something that I'm missing or that I want from a specific relationship, right? And to eventually have that conversation and figure out how to make that work, right? So again, I know that's going to be part of the conversation that I'm going to be having with my, you know, supervisor. But I needed that space to process with my therapist and kind of figure out what I needed and what I wanted. And so I think one of the things that I liked at the end of every one of these, and I'm going to quickly go over mine, but after every chapter, they talk about ways that you can work towards transformation and change things. So I know as a nine, they encourage, you know, journaling. And so, I mean, I'm not great at journaling, but it's something I'm trying to see if I could work on. But they journal, they say to journal on the question, what is my calling or life's program? Am I pursuing it or postponing it to keep the peace? So I think that's something that even if I journal or not, I think it's important to keep that in the back of my mind and continue to check in with myself about that, because I know my personality is I can, because I enjoy certain things or I want to be with certain people, sometimes I'll postpone what I actually want to do because I still want to be able to be around that person or to do certain things with the person. And so I have to be mindful of like not losing myself. Even though it's weird, I do have fun doing things with that person. I don't want to lose myself, right? Also, they have asked someone to help you find task management or to-do system to help you with it, stay on task. So for me, I've learned through actually a really good friend of mine from work to figure out how to add some more routines and stay on task. The thing that's been cool about our relationship is that I've learned how to do it, but not in a way that's dependent on her. And I think it's part of Shelly because I've modeled a little bit about how she does it, where she has her method of like keeping track and doing things for herself. And so I've learned how to do that for myself in a way that doesn't stress me out, because I'm not necessarily type A or a planner, but I know routine has been helpful for me too. So I've learned a little bit better what that looks like to create a version of that for myself, right? Other things, practicing no when someone asks you to do something you don't want to. I'm actually becoming a lot better at that because I think as I'm getting older too, I'm like, if this is going to deplete my energy and I really don't give a fuck about this, no, respectfully. Other things, beware of numbing strategies you use to avoid having to deal with life. So better, whether it's a glass of wine, shopping, Girl Scout cooking. So again, I know I brought up, I struggle with emotional eating. I know another habit I've done is if I am really emotional, I try not to drink because I don't want that to be something I pair with, you know, being emotional, but also I don't want to encourage like terrible, unhealthy, numbing behaviors. But I've been trying to do more positive stuff. So if I need to go on a walk, maybe if I watch the show, that's funny. I do something to kind of distract me, but make sure it's healthy. And then I still go back to dealing with what it is, right? And sometimes I might need to give myself a day, a few hours, but at the end of the day, I'm going back to the issue and trying to deal with it, right? I'm learning, they say, to don't be afraid to have opinions or express them. That's something I'm learning to work on. And especially they give the advice of, like, you can start with the smaller things and start building up to the more important stuff. So that's kind of something I've been practicing right now. And some of my newer relationships is, okay, how can I build towards expressing myself a little bit more despite the fear, right? Resisting the urge to fall back on passive aggressive behaviors like procrastination and avoidance. I struggle with the avoidance one a little bit more. But yeah, procrastination is still one of the things. So I'm learning how to do that, especially with they bring up if you are feeling angry to try to be honest and open as one of the tips. And I'm still working on that. I think I'm still not sure how to say, hey, I'm angry in the moment. I think that's something I do want to figure out how to work on, especially if I'm ever in a partnership with a significant other. I don't want to always be like, hey, I'm going to wait 3 weeks to talk to you, even though it was like a week. But I want to figure out how to do it in the moment. So I'm still working on that. But I do also wonder a lot of time if it is about safety for me, if I feel a sense of safety with you to do it. I'm still trying to explore that. I know that's something that I have to figure out with my therapist a little bit more. But that's something that I'm trying to figure out how to be more open and say, hey, I'm very angry right now. I'm not doing well. especially to the person, because I could talk to my safe friends about the situation and say, hey, this person upset me, which is fine, because they help me, at least these people, they help me figure out how to solve the problem. But I have a hard time always communicating it to the exact person. So that's one. So quickly, the last few, they talk about, seven talks about understanding how important and unique your voice is. I think I kind of understand that, but just being okay with, like, having people hear what I think, and it's okay to not have the same views. I think I'm pretty good with that one, but sometimes it can still be a little bit intense to share that. And then I think recognizing that, you know, my tendency to merge with others can be good, but not to let that be a disadvantage for myself is another good one that they bring up on here. So yeah, so like I said, I know the end of this, I love these little tips that they gave. I didn't read all of them, but I love the little tips here that they give you. Each Enneagram type has that. And I think that's really helpful to give you some practical tools or things to start thinking about so you can figure out how to do these, right? So even for, like, practicing saying no. So yes, they say practice saying no. And you could be like, what does that look like? So then you could take some step to be, okay, how can I practice how to say no? And that's where other books, like, I know there's a book on boundaries. There's resources on boundaries that they can help you figure out. Here's some step-by-step ways to start. And so again, that's why I like these kind of books, these kind of different personality things, because it kind of can help you become aware of some of your habits and your behaviors and eventually give you some things to think about in terms of, okay, what are some next steps that I could take? And it's okay that you may not know right away what the next steps are, but at least it allows you to name it, voice it, and say, hey, I may not know what to do about this right now, but you can eventually start working towards that. And I know that's something that I'm really thankful for my therapist that he's helped me with even doing that, because there's times where I'm like, hey, I'm sad. I know I don't know what to do about it right now, but just the fact that I'm naming it and voicing it is a big part of the journey for me, because that's something I never really allowed myself to do. Same thing with the anger, especially since I'm part of this little tribe. But especially with anger, like naming I'm angry and actually voicing it and then figuring out what to do with it, right? So I think this book has been a little bit more freeing for me with that stuff and allowing me to just be open and okay with being the way that I am and then taking some steps to be healthy. And then again, therapists, good friends, support all kind of add to the experience of, okay, how do I grow and become better? So with that said, I thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Critical Reads, the podcast. I do hope that this read myself was very educational for you all. And like I said, I think a lot of this is just designed to help you guys be better versions of yourself so that you can love yourself more, so you can love the people in your lives better and things like that. And I know, because I know for me, like one of the things I decided a long time ago is if I were to be in a relationship with somebody, whether it's romantic or platonic or whatever the case may be, I want to be a version of myself that's going to add and to the person's life and, you know, make it better. I don't want to be a person that's going to be, you know, you're like, ugh, I have to see this person again, you know, and especially, you know, if I was to ever get married to somebody, I wanted to be able to be a partner that's fully like self-actualized or working towards that and trying to be a better human being so that I can, you know, enhance their life. And I'm hoping that, you know, they're doing the same thing, right? But I want it to be someone that is enhancing their life. And so again, looking at these books, looking at these resources as a way to do that is such a big part of the growing journey, especially when it comes to enhancing our mental health and our well-being. So I hope that you guys are open to this book or just open to books like this, and that you are out here just doing the best that you can to heal, to grow, to break some generational curses, because bitch, I know it's hard as hell, but at the end of the day, it's worth it. And I hope that you are able to get the right resources and the right people in your spot to help you along in your journey. So thank you again, guys, for listening to this episode. I hope that wherever you are, you're having a good day, a good night, a good evening, and I look forward to releasing another episode soon. Hey there, and thank you for joining me on this week's episode of Critical Reads. To find out more about me or to consume more of my content, please feel free to visit my website, soulsessionswithneff.com, where I share a variety of things, including blog posts, resource lists, and have a regularly updated calendar for this podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook using the handle @soulsessionswithneff. While you're at it, if you really enjoy listening to Critical Reads, I encourage you to please subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google, or Spotify, and take some time to rate us on these different platforms. Your reviews will really help the show gain some visibility and also give me some much needed feedback on how the show is doing. I thank you in advance for your time and your support. And until next time, this has been Neff with some Critical Reads.